If you visit shop.momofuku.com, you can check out the new bundles in the Momofuku Goods store, including recipe packs and new ways to buy bundles of Momofuku Goods tailored to a specific recipe. There's a triple garlic chicken ramen pack that has 20% off every Momofuku ingredient you will need to make that recipe. You can get a 10% off link by going to our Discord in the hashtag From Our Friends channel. And yes, the discount does stack with the bundle. I'm really, really happy with everything we've been doing with our products. We just closed out Expo West. I'll talk about that in a second. Let's get on to the show. Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Major Domo Media. Thank you, Yola Tango, as always. Happy birthday, Victoria.
Happy birthday, Victoria.
Anything special? You going to do anything cool?
No, I'll probably just go to dinner somewhere and try to go maybe to the beach or something. Nothing too crazy.
Nice. Nice. Well, no one likes celebrating birthdays anymore, especially when you're turning 47. Again, the definition of old to me is when you watch old movies and you are now older than all the characters in the movies. And there's not one single athlete that is competitive at your age. Doesn't exist anymore. That's when you have really transcended into sadness, as far as I'm concerned. And then you get Mike Tyson fighting Logan Paul on Netflix. So, like, that's it. Then you become a freak show. So it's sad. It's sad. I mean, getting older is not good.
Even when people start saying, like, hey, like, I was born in 88, so they'll be like, hey, Kevin Durant looks kind of washed up out there. And I'm like, oh, my God.
There you go. So for those of you that don't know, there's this thing called Expo West. And I think there's an Expo East as well. But the one in Anaheim that happens in March every year is, like, the AVN Awards for food, the there's like it's so weird, man. It's so weird. Anaheim also just packed with every single producer of snacks and things you buy in your life, right? And this is the showcase for everything you buy in a grocery store. And I gotta say, it's a little intense. And we had a beautiful stand there, but it felt like some circle of hell. really was hard. But I think that someone's gotta make a documentary about what happens at these food shows, because it doesn't get the fanfare of any of the expos, any of the food expos. There's a pizza expo. There's Feast and Fancy that happens in Chicago and in New York. I'm talking about real sort of inside baseball stuff, but if you're listening and you're curious, you should check it out, because that's where the trends happen. That's where you see the foods. Like, think about it. Like, 12 years ago, the first person to make cauliflower pizza crust happened, right? So, like everything else, you have very little innovation, but those that do get, you know, it just gets copied so quickly. And that happened this week. It also, it was intense.
Let me ask you something about this. Like, the thing I've noticed from these expos, especially Expo West, actually, is people come back with just tons and tons of swag and free stuff. Are you the type of person to, like, take a bag and just, like, stuff it all in there?
Well, yeah, you can basically treat it like you're stealing everything from all the booths. So I tried a bunch of snacks. I don't know if anything, like, moved the needle per se for me. I did meet the founder of Tosi.
Oh.
And she was very pleasant, but I was like, I can't. I mean, it's like a nut snack thing. I was like, I can't do that. I can't do anything with you guys. I have a real Christina Tosi.
There's a joke in there about that somewhere.
If I'm also speaking a little bit slowly, it's because I'm still heavily medicated right now. I'm going to get my second opinion on Monday, and it looks like surgery is in my line of sight. So take care of those backs, y'all. Take care of those backs. The other thing you should take care of, guys, is your hair. So before we get started on the podcast, and we got a three things and ask Dave, and we're going to do an atlas. I walked into the studio today, and you know, Yuno's doing like a fashion show for Victoria behind the booth. And he proclaims, "I'm losing my hair."
Victoria, we're cutting all of this. We're cutting all of this. All right, so I go to the hairstylist yesterday. I just get my hair cut, and I notice a big white patch on the side of my head. And I was like, "Damn, these white hairs really grown in bunches." And then I keep looking at it as she's cutting, and I'm just like, "Holy shit, no!"
Where is it?
It's on the left side of my head. And don't zoom in. Don't zoom in. I see you manning the robocam. All right, it's right here.
If that happens, you can have like alopecia sometimes. And
I don't think it's alopecia, but she was like, "I think it's going to grow back." But then you start to wonder,
it will grow back. I'm telling you. I was watching an old episode of Ugly Delicious, and my wife keeps on reminding me that for like a year, super stressful work, I had a giant chunk of hair that was gone, my lower left side. It doesn't mean you're losing your hair. You just have some,
I'm terrified.
You have like some minor alopecia or something like that. But in general, I don't think you're losing your hair.
I hope not, because she also made a comment that like, "Hey, this middle section is starting to thin out." And I was like, yo, like.
It's something that happens to a lot of dudes. It's hard to prepare for the hair loss routine. Some people lose it in their, when they're like 20, 21. There are a lot of people I know that are getting hair plugs and transplants. That's an intense thing that scares me. But I didn't know that was permanent, and their hair grows back all the time. So you could do one of those. You could be one of those hair plug guys.
That was the first thing I Googled once I got out of there. And I was like, I'm going to have to make a financial commitment here.
I think you should just shave it off.
Come on.
Yeah, dude.
Come on.
You have to have a round head to have a shaved head.
I don't have that.
You don't know that. I think you have a pretty round noggin, dude. And that's what I think. If it gets to that point, you should just shave it off. For me, with my whatever's on my face, all my hair is about to turn white. And when my hair turns white, it turns very thin and wispy. So I think I'm just going to have to shave my entire head.
You don't have a lot of gray going on there. So, I mean, it still looks pretty good, dude.
If I could take it out, I'll pluck it out.
I do the same thing. I try.
Gray hairs to me, it just doesn't make me feel good.
Okay.
But, you know, hairlines aside, I always felt that I just have a high hairline because that just runs in my mom's side of the family. But I don't know if I'm ever going to grow my hair back. I cut it off during the pandemic. It's just a lot easier.
That's what I figured. You just save time. You have no decision fatigue. Like, you know, God knows how many decisions you make a day. Like, you don't need to add, "What's my hair going to look like?" to that list, right? So,
but are you going to start taking any of those like testosterone blockers, like,
or like TRT or whatever? Yeah,
Propecia.
No, dude. Like, I'm just gonna look into what LeBron did and see if I can do that.
Yeah, LeBron got hair.
Yeah, he just got like transplant. So, yeah. But if it's for real, gone forever, which I doubt, and I think it's just falling out because I'm stressed or whatever. But like, no,
just shave it, dude.
Bro, come on.
Shave it, and then I'm gonna grow my hair out.
God damn it.
It is a sense of helplessness, right?
Yeah.
And I think especially with all the body hurt that I'm going through right now, the idea of time passing is a real thing. Midlife crisis type of thing. And everyone tells you, take care of your health. And I'm more aware of it than ever before because I'm feeling it. It's been a slow decline and I got to get healthy. But the things that are signifiers of age, I think that's what really scares. At first, I think you're worried about how you're going to look, right? If you have a patch of hair that's missing or you're starting to go bald, that's a pretty traumatic thing for a guy. I do know that happens to some women as well. I mean, I think once you get past that, you go through the 7 steps of grief, it's the next phase of that processing is I'm getting old. I'm getting old. And that's just the reality. You're getting old.
Fuck that. No. Sorry. We're going to censor that. But yeah, no. No. Okay. So I'm probably in the denial stage right now. But like what I'm saying is like, no matter how, I think the hardest part is that mental part where you're just like, because I suffer from gout. And like when you I can't get, walk.
You have gout?
I've had gout since I was like 16. Dude, and
that's sick.
It sucks.
You're a king.
It fucking sucks, dude. And when you can't move, you just like FML. Like I hate everything right now. You know, like it's just, and you just feel like less able to just be there for people, and it sucks. And you're just like, dude, this stinks. Like, and you just get start beating yourself up mentally, and it's just like one of the hardest parts is that mental wanting to do something, wanting to be there. And then like the hair thing was just like, I'm just very vain, I think. And that's why, like when it hit me, I was just like, oh crap, it's coming, you know? So
just cut it off. To me now, it doesn't matter. You're married, you got kids. but this has been a very, I think, trying year for me health-wise, because I've been trying very hard to take care of myself. And I got to say, there have been moments of, I won't say depression in the depression that I felt before, but it's almost a sense of ennui, you know? And again, I always liken it, not that I'm an athlete, like I've been trying everything I can. And once I get into a groove of, you know, working out, watching what I eat, I get injured again. And I've always been injured. I've been historically injured my entire life. But I think a lot of that is a good transition to the three things I wanted to talk about. I feel a lot of it stems from the wear and tear of working in restaurants.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit-free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit-free.
I've always maintained that cooking is a very physical exercise, and it absolutely is. And I wanted to talk about it because I just don't think it gets highlighted enough, almost never, right? I guarantee you this. I'm going to put a huge wager in the next year, New York Times or something, there's going to be articles about the physical toll, the physical wear and tear that you have as a cook working the line every night in restaurants. I don't think I've read anything about that. And there's not enough data that's like, oh, like, you know, if you play basketball, you're going to have joint injuries and ACL, and football, you know, maybe it's CTE or something like that. There's all kinds of other things that happen as a cook, but the physical nature of cooking does not get enough recognition as far as I'm concerned. I think a lot of people think that cooking, you know, everyone's out of shape. It's not true, right? You need to have endurance, number one. I mean, sometimes you're standing on your feet 14 to 18 hours a day. Depending on what station you are, if you're a saucier, you're per day, you could be doing, I don't know, 10 tons of weight up and down. If you're working the line, opening up the oven drawer, a few hundred times a day, reaching in, bending down, these movements start to wear and tear. So on the x-rays, my right side of my body is certainly degraded because of use. So that's what the doctor said. It's just like, he's like, that's just old age and how you've treated your body. I just don't know if there's any way around it. And one of the things is cooking, if you've been doing it long enough, most cooks that are in the profession that are cooking for 10 plus years, you're not working the line. you're not working the line. That's just the fact, right? There's a, because there's the physical nature of it all that you can't. I'm not saying you can't. There are, and there are times when a chef will work the line. I've seen it. I've done it. I haven't done it in a while, but in a pinch, you can do it, but it's not something you can do on the regular. I'm just bringing this up. I don't have a solution. I don't have an answer, but I definitely have arthritis. I went through a bunch of things. And when I lived in Australia, I actually did some kind of alternative medicine that gave me a shot of gold, I think. I went through some crazy thing. It was in so much pain, I couldn't open. Arthritis, number one. Carpal tunnel is number two. So these are the three things that I think cooks have. Number one, no question, it's arthritis. Number two, carpal tunnel happens. All the time. All the time. And carpal tunnel, that's not just your fingers from a keyboard, it's your whole arm.
Yeah.
Hip, and I know a lot of chefs that have hip replacements at a certain age, and your knees get just shot from going up and down. And I think the last thing that happens is your back, your lower back, your some version of your back, if you're in it long enough, starts to become a problem. I don't know for everybody, but I've certainly seen it with a lot of my friends, including myself. There's just not enough data. It's like, think about it in football. Now they're practicing with different helmets, and they're changing their structure of practice, so it's not hitting on every day. It's just like walkthroughs. Nobody's changing the physical nature of cooking. And I think part of why I'm talking about this is because as elevated as cooking has become, as professional as it's become, and as much as it's changed, it's still a blue-collar job. Still a blue-collar job. You still have to exert sometimes tremendous amounts of physical energy that your body has to endure. And I don't know why people don't talk about it enough.
Yeah, of course, there's a perception of like, oh, chefs are like, you know, kind of big, or, they're tasting the food, and they work in these very like nice restaurants, and you kind of have all these associations with like the trappings of luxury and all these things. And then you don't realize like actually the amount of physical exertion compounded by how much they weigh, or like the pain on their joints, on their knees.
On the steps.
Yeah.
If you wear a step meter and you're a line cook, you're doing 15, 20,000 steps easy.
That's so crazy.
Easy. Even me, when I'm just doing Dinner Time Live, I'm doing 20,000 steps.
Holy crap.
It's 20,000 steps. It's 15, 20,000 steps. And I'm not even working like all day. It really is.
Oh my God.
So a lot of it depends on the kitchen you're in too, because again, this is where I think a properly designed kitchen makes sense, because you really don't want to take more than one step from your refrigeration and where your mise en place is to the hotline. It's usually like, You just want to turn, but, depends on the floor. Some floors of kitchens are shock absorbent, all these things. They start to add up.
I think this kind of adds to your point that AI will never replace chefs and cooks, because like I'm trying to think of solutions for how to alleviate some of this burden, and I can't think of anything. I'm like, yeah, you kind of have to do that. Like, yeah, you have to open the oven door, you have to bend over, you have to cut, you have to chop. Like, how are you going to process this? Like, no, all this stuff?
And that's why I really feel strongly that there is going to be a sliver of restaurants that are going to pay extraordinary amounts of money to people in the industry that are cooks and front of the house servers, simply because we can do something that a machine can't do. And maybe one day it will. We should probably try to talk to a robot creator operator, simply because to mimic the human hand, it's going to be a long ways out. You're going to read a lot about the automation in kitchens, no question. But again, it's the kind of automation that should be, because it's a binary movement. But to do something that is a little bit more finesseful, yeah, in a lot of ways, I think the AI revolution is going to make it a sort of a golden era for craftsmanship. So we'll see what happens. AI is coming for white collar jobs. Yeah, there's no question for sure about it.
That actually sounds pretty dope, though. Like a golden age for craftsmanship.
For sure.
I'm pretty psyched for it.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing: keeping it bullshit free. That's why their pasture raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was the passing of David Boulay, who passed about 3 weeks ago. You may not know of him, and I mentioned that I want to talk about him briefly, and I want to. David Boulay, from Connecticut, was the chef at Montrachet in New York with Drew Nuperon in the early 90s, then opened up Boulay and then Boulay Bakery. He also had Danube. He had Boulay's Test Kitchen. He had a restaurant in Tribeca that changed my concept of what food could be. When you would walk into Boulay, the new Boulay, it was like 1,000 apples on the wall. You would walk in, and that was the decor. You would walk in, and 1,000 apples. I don't know, 1,000. There was just a lot of apples. And that smell, I'll never forget that smell. You smell, it's an orchard when you walk in. And David Boulay's food will probably not remembered, unfortunately, by the younger generation. The reason I want to talk about Boulay is you are probably working for a chef if you're working in an ambitious restaurant that worked for somebody in his family tree. And I would say for like 5 to 10 years in the mid-90s to early aughts, Boulay was the place to be in New York City. It was the place where it was probably one of the few places that was trying to cook French food in a lighter fashion, similar to what you have at Arpège. And I know a lot of diners that would go there would never get the same meal twice. So a lot of my friends worked there. I never worked there. Christina Tosi worked for Boulay. It was a school where many of the best went, you know, Peter Serpico, Evan Rich, Sarah Rich, you know, Galen Zamora. The list of people that worked there are sort of, you know, it's crazy. Cesar Ramirez worked for Boulay. So Boulay was so important in food, and unfortunately, it just shows you how quickly things move. It's just not as appreciated by a younger audience. Master Saucier changed in some ways how we should get ingredients and cook, and just the juxtaposition of things that he would make. You know, he was just one of the best chefs. He's on the Mount Rushmore of American chefs. You know, Thomas Keller is there. David Boulay is there. No question in my mind. So his passing was sad. Chef Boulay was so fucking nice to me, always. And whenever I could cook for him, I cooked for him a handful of times. I was always super nervous. But I know what he's done. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to have chefs like that ever again. That's a sad thing to me, right? He's a legend. And I just don't know if we're ever going to see that kind of caliber of chef doing that kind of food ever again in America. In America, particularly New York City. Another sad note, Misha, we had Alex Stupak on a couple months ago, 3 months ago on, and Stupak closed Misha, his ode to American dining in Midtown Manhattan. I have a lot of thoughts to say about that. I just wanted to say shout out to Alex Stupak. He took a swing. It makes me sad that somebody that really is trying to do modern cooking, embracing the values that he's learned from the masters before him in terms of modern cooking, and trying to do something different, and it just didn't resonate or with the critics or whatever. I just don't know if people realize, again, in some bittersweet fashion, the excellence that Stupak is doing and the excellence of David Boulay, just how fast things are moving in food in terms of what is valuable and what is not. So it's hard to stay ahead of the zeitgeist, you know, especially when critics want new things, but they only reward the old. Not everyone, but you know who you are. Anyway, let's take a break. We're back. You know what we got?
All right, we got an Ask Dave. So it's time for Ask Dave. I want to thank everyone for reaching out and listening. Remember, you can always send us your questions to askdave@majordomomedia.com, or our Discord users can just tag at, you know, with questions, and I'll be sure to read them for a chance to be featured on the show. Hi, Dave. As a fellow back pain sufferer, I am really sorry to hear how you've been feeling lately. I truly believe nerve pain is the worst. You are a champ for being able to do all of your endeavors like Dinner Time Live while being in pain. Anyways, my question for you is, what do you do for food while you are in pain and not feeling up to cooking? Are you only doing quick and easy recipes? Is Grace doing any cooking? Or do you mostly take out? Sometimes I don't know what to do on those really bad pain days, but I still want to eat delicious food. Do you have any hacks you could share? Thanks. And I hope you feel better soon.
Well, thank you. Back pain sufferers unite. For me, whenever my back goes out, it's a reminder to cut back calories dramatically.
Ooh.
Because you can pack on pounds so quickly.
That's true, yeah.
Because you don't realize how whatever you need per day to just sustain your body, those calories often include just your normal movement. And when you are more sedentary, it just, you know, you could, without changing anything, be adding, I think, 500 to like 1,000 calories a day. So you can really pack on pounds. So I think the first thing to remind, and this is from years of doing this, is to be much more mindful of what you're eating. Because I can't work out. I can't really do anything. So I'm not really, I wouldn't say intermittent fasting or anything. The other thing is, like, on the drugs I'm on right now, I'm like, I almost have no appetite. Like, my Oura Ring fell off. I don't even know where the fuck it went.
Oh, that's, uh-oh.
You know, because, like, that happens. So I don't know. Like, more soups, more broths. I think for me, I'm just trying to eat anything that is not inflammatory. That's just me.
Okay.
Right? Which ultimately I think is it almost seems like a keto diet, which sucks.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring about the basal metabolic rate. Just like completely taking a plunge as soon as you can't move. And like that's the biggest source of like caloric deficit there is like, yeah, how much are you moving? And if you're not moving.
You can't work out. You can't lift weights. You can't do anything. Yeah. And for me, it is what it is. And right now talking to you, it's hard for me because my mind is so fucking cloudy because of the meds I'm on. So it's hard to think straight right now. And everything seems foggy. So yeah, in terms of what I eat, I didn't eat anything this morning. Having some drinks here. And then we're going to do some rehearsals and I'll taste something there. And probably that'll be it. Because, when you're in pain, you don't want to eat.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'm with you. That's usually when I drop a few pounds, yeah. Because I just stop eating. Like, if I have a gout flare-up, that's the last thing you want to do. So,
what do you do when you have a gout flare-up?
Dude, I just fucking lie in bed and just, like, work, you know? I put my foot up with an ice pack and pray to God that it gets better soon and then just get back to work.
All right, what's next?
All right, well, it's time for Atlas. And our guest today is a Korean-American who grew up in Orange County and has eaten in Koreatown basically his entire life. And it's me. So we're going to cover Koreatown and the surrounding suburbs, Garden Grove, Fullerton, Buena Park, Palma, and Irvine to some degree. But just wanted to talk about Korean food.
For those that are listening with just top of your head, where are the largest concentration of Korean populations in America? So I think New England, not so much.
No.
New York, Queens, Fort Lee.
Fort Lee.
Right. Flushing. But Flushing over the past 25 years has become more Chinese.
Yeah.
So Fort Lee is strong in food.
It's Bergen County, yeah.
Super, super strong. If you want to find the best Korean food, it's probably in Fort Lee.
Could be, yeah.
32nd Street, clearly. In
You're talking about on the East Coast.
East Coast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then I'm just going over everything. So in DC, there's a large, that's where I'm from, yeah, one of the largest Korean populations. Mm-hmm. In Annandale, Alexandria area, it's like a small K-town. Atlanta has a huge Korean population.
That's right.
Surprisingly enough. Yeah. Fucking really, really big. Dallas has a Korean population.
Yeah. DFW Metro generally, yeah.
Chicago has a big Korean population. Seattle's more Japanese American.
Yeah.
There's Korean.
There's still Korean folks out there. I think my cousin lives out there. Yeah.
And then it's Southern California. But you know, you can't, like, you say San Diego, yeah, there's Korean people, but it's not. You know, yeah, what I mean? I think from the West Coast, it's just Southern California and that's it.
Well, you got a little bit of NorCal, like Sunnyvale. They got some Koreans up there. San Jose area, I think.
That doesn't count.
I forgot. NorCal doesn't exist too. Yeah. Southern California, Koreatown, Los Angeles, Koreatown, and the surrounding suburbs, largest Korean population in the U.S.
So this is hyper-localized that we're going to talk about in Atlas, but more than likely, if you're a listener, you're probably close to an American K-town. Or in Australia, there's K-towns everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Let's change it up.
Yeah.
If you're four white people, mm-hmm, going into a Korean restaurant,
mm-hmm,
you know, we won't say any, like, you know, let's not name a restaurant, but a popular Korean restaurant.
Sure.
You want to try Korean food and you're not Korean. Mm-hmm. We'll just say you're four non-Korean people.
Mm-hmm.
You walk in. What are they thinking?
It smells like garlic in here.
What is the restaurant thinking?
Oh, what is the restaurant thinking? Well, we need to put the forks down and get some chapche. Bibimbap, chapche.
I mean, it's certainly profiling to the degree of like, all right.
Yeah.
Let's just get them in, get them out.
Yeah.
That they're just thinking that.
Yeah, 100%.
Unless someone speaks Korean, which does happen.
That's a huge unlock, yeah.
Game changer.
Yeah.
But if you walk into a Korean restaurant, even if you're Korean,
uh-huh,
but you're gyopo, they don't give a shit.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But if you walk in speaking Korean, regardless of your skin color, your group, that changes the whole game.
Oh, yeah.
But that almost never happens. So that's off the table.
Yeah.
You walk in, you're four non-Korean people, you walk into a very popular Korean restaurant, wherever you are in the world, what are the owners, the service staff,
mm-hmm,
and everyone else in there is pretty much Korean.
Mm-hmm.
There's a feeling of like, should I eat here?
Mm.
Korean people don't make it warm. It's not a warm feeling of hospitality. Like, welcome.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, there's no.
Thank you.
There is
there's no.
You
know, shimase. There's, yeah, no. It's like, oh, fuck. You know, the ajumma, the mom that runs it, she's like, oh,
these motherfuckers. Like, yeah.
That's what they're thinking. You might get the love at lunch when there's no one in there, but when it's busy, there's like, okay.
Oh, you're not even going to love it.
So you sit down. We're at a Korean barbecue restaurant. You sit down. What do you do?
If you don't know what you're doing and this is your first time, dude, first off, like, don't order the bibimbap. Like, don't go for the standard stuff, you know? But also, like, honestly, it's weird I'm saying this. Don't ask too many fucking questions. Like,
what are some dishes that you order that will let people know, like, oh, you're serious?
I think it's just like you get the hardcore shit, like the gopchang and stuff like that. Like, you could definitely like make an impression.
What's gopchang?
Which is the intestine, small intestines of the cow.
I won't do that.
Yeah, you don't do awful, but like.
But if you order, you know, chonggukjang, which is.
Oh, yeah.
Smells like poo, right? It's a very pungent Korean stew that not many Korean people even like, right?
Yeah.
You clear out a room.
Super fermented soybean paste.
You order that, I'm pretty sure the server's going to be like, whoa.
Yeah, you'll raise an eyebrow. I think jjigae, especially spicy jjigae, like that's a good entry point. Like you want to go for something spicy like a kimchi jjigae or a gochujang jjigae. Eundaegu joreum is usually a good one where like, wow, you want to eat braised cod? Like, so you go for like the prepared foods, like meats, I think just kicking it off with cheddar is like a good move to get like, hey,
that is cheddar.
It's thinly sliced brisket. Usually for
that's a huge unlock.
You think so?
Repeat what you said.
Okay.
Charol is what?
Thinly sliced brisket.
So what does it read out on the menu?
Oh, C-H-A-D-O-L. Yeah. Charol.
And what is it normally? What's the ending on that?
Baggy. B-A-E-G-G-I.
There you go. Yeah. That's all I was asking.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Right? That's
people that may not know.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not you. It's usually at the top of a menu.
Right.
That is a real, almost every Korean person I know orders that.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
It is not on the tips of anybody that's not Korean.
That's actually, I didn't even realize that's what that. I'm trying to say. I'm so entrenched. Yeah.
So if you say, and you when you order brisket, because it's thinly sliced brisket, you always start with that. It is your appetizer to your meat cooking, right? Just by ordering that is like, oh.
I think I'm too used to these ladies just being surly all the time.
these four non-Korean people, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Just like if you order that, because if you just go, give me the bulgogi. Yeah. And another thing is, no one orders bulgogi. Unless you're at a bulgogi joint.
That's right. There are specialized places for that.
And Korean barbecue spots, the generalized ones, like I never get bulgogi.
Yeah. I mean, the most important part of that experience is the charcoal. And a lot of places don't have charcoal. So like, yeah.
So if you go straight, so if you do it, a lot of these things are two orders per table minimum. So you get the table, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to get beef. You want to get one clean beef that's not marinated. You want to get one beef that is marinated. And then maybe you finish off with pork, right? That happens quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just stick with beef, but it's charolbegi into some kind of marinade or just unmarinated short rib.
Mm-hmm.
You can just do that. That's three orders. And
you're probably good at that point. Yeah.
Right. If you are ordering, they light the grill on and you're eating raw garlic. You're dipping the raw garlic in the samjang and you're nibbling it.
That's an OG movie. That's a dead giveaway OG move.
She's like, whoa. If I saw that on a table, I'm like, whoa. Whoa.
That's an OG move for sure.
Whoa. Yeah. Who? I was like, whoa, who brought the ringer? Right? If they're getting the gochu and they're dipping the pepper and they're eating that, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Even more. Just a fucking hardcore Korean move.
Yeah. And with your hand. Like, not with the chopsticks. Just grab it with your hand. Just boom.
You preemptively beat the ajima by putting some kimchi on the grill. If you do that, whoa.
Yeah.
These I'm giving you real tips here, folks. Yeah. Right? If you want street cred, these are the little things you got to do.
That's really interesting.
Right? So ordering right. I would walk in and you order the beef, you order the pork, no chapche. Here's the other thing. You want to order so well that they give you chapche.
For free. That's the unlock.
The unlock. They give you chapche. And then when you start getting banchan that is more seafood oriented or things that other tables don't get or they're not offering many refills of, you've just unlocked the cheat code, right? And that's reward. It's called service. In Korean food, it's called service.
Yeah, literally service.
Service.
Uh-huh.
And that's when they're like, okay, we got a gamer here.
Yeah.
Let's take, it's like, they're ringing the bell. They're like, let's take care of these folks. You can do it, folks. You can do it. Right? So don't order the chapche. If you order well, they will give you chapche.
Yeah.
If you order, the one thing I would order outside of the beef, right? So I'd order brisket, you know, marinated, and maybe pork, you know, samgyeopsal, pork belly. Let's just say those are my three. And that honestly is like $180 right there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not cheap.
Yeah.
You're going to get more banchan.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're sitting down. This is all happening 30 minutes. You sit down, you order. Right after you order, boom, your entire table's covered with banchan.
Mm-hmm.
Pickles, odds and ends. You're just eating, and you order that. You start off that you order. There's no appetizer, right? You start off ordering the meat.
Yeah.
But the side dish, if you order a gyeongjin.
Oh.
That's another, whoa.
I feel like I take all this for granted. You I get all this stuff granted. Service, like, I get service gyeongjin, so I'm just always like,
right? I'm telling you, if like, you're four non-white, you're four non-Korean people,
yeah.
You're not getting gyeongjin.
Yeah.
I mean, some places now it's become really complimentary anyway.
Yeah.
But not all places.
Yeah. But I know Parks has a nice one. They put like masago on top and stuff like that. So
if you order gyeongjin and you get the bigger, not the smaller size, you're intentionally getting that. That's sending a note to everybody like, okay, we got a real player here, right? That's the only side I would order.
Unless the sum comes on the side.
Wait.
Okay.
You're not even there yet, right? We've already talked about this. Then you ask for the sesame oil.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
You got to ask for the sesame oil.
Yep.
That's another marker of like, okay.
Koreans.
Pour it on the salt and the pepper.
Yeah.
And then sum is the basket of vegetables and lettuce and getting you perilla leaf. We've talked about this too. If you just wrap it in perilla leaf, you're an OG. You know? If you literally are... This is to me the most blatant move of like, put some respect on my fucking name.
Yeah.
If you are like using chopsticks and you get the piece yourself off the grill before the ajumma comes back to cut it up for you, and then you dip it in samjang and you put a little garlic and you eat it in perilla leaf, which is not for everybody.
Not for everybody, yeah.
Very pungent. You sort of won. I mean, that one move is you won. Now, before you get there, sometimes they don't offer the sam basket.
Mm-hmm.
But if you order the sam basket and you want the deluxe sam basket, that's another cowbell ring of like, whoa. Now, if you do all of these in sync, you're going to get a real soigné experience.
Oh, for sure.
You're now earning the right.
Exactly.
You're earning the respect and they're going to be like, we got to take care of them.
They will remember you, by the way. Yeah, they will remember you.
Now, you're eating the meat and you're eating it right and you're eating the banchan. You're now eating everything right. And here's another important fucking move. Important move. Some Korean barbecue shops will have scallion salad.
Oh.
Or a very lightly dressed lettuce with some scallions in it.
Yes.
Right? Rice, wine, vinegar, a little gochugaru, some soy. Very light. Usually, it's... You'll see this for sure. Thinly sliced scallion salad. The move here, again, if you do this, you take some of that and you put it on your small little plate. And with the brisket, or really it's for the brisket. You take the brisket and you put it on top of your little scallion salad. And then you take your chopsticks and you just little salad bite. You do that. I mean, people are going to think, you know, you did a Freaky Friday with some Korean person.
That is definitely a pro move, and you're exactly right. The brisket is the play with it. It's the perfect pairing.
You have to,
yeah,
right. Now, if you're, you know, like, we won't get into the protocol of the grill itself, right? But don't cook the meat.
Ooh,
I don't think ajumma's like it when you're moving it around.
Yeah. They take it personal sometimes.
You know what I mean? Like they have their system. And when you start moving around. But what you can do is this. If you are cooking the meat and the meat's in front of you, whatever it may be, I think the proper protocol is if you're going to touch the meat on the grill and flip it over, you have to eat it right away.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you touch it, you eat it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And don't mix it back into the pile
You got to eat that.
No, right, that's yours. Away. Yeah.
Now, we got a little ahead of ourselves on the ordering. So you ordered your chadobegi, your kalbi, your gyeongjin, and now you're doing it so well that they're like, shit, let's get these guys some chapche.
Mm-hmm.
Chapche is always the you did it.
Give them some chapche.
Like, you're in the club.
Yeah.
But you order jjigae, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the jjigae comes pretty much after, like almost instantly it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on the jjigae you order. If you get a kimchi jjigae, pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
But the real move here is if you order doenjang jjigae,
mm-hmm.
and you're not Korean people.
That's a good point.
And it's like, what? If you order doenjang jjigae from ajumma that's taking your order, she's going to be like, you sure?
Yeah, she's like, do you know what that is? Like, she might try to explain to you, like, what's in there.
You can point to the picture. It's like, no, I want this one. I want the one that looks like diarrhea. Boiling diarrhea.
By the way, delicious. I don't delicious. Care. It's delicious.
Again, yeah, changes the game.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what the move is with the jiga? You spoon some out. Okay, first thing you taste the broth, right? And then you create a little well with your rice and you start bringing it in and mixing up like the sauce,
like,
the tofu.
It's like gochujang to some degree.
Yeah.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
That's not neither here nor there for these.
Our good people.
Yeah. I think another movie, if you did none of these and you ordered just jjigae, but if you eat it the way I do, mm-hmm. and you just take almost let the metal spoon sit in the boiling cauldron of broth, and then you put a ladle of that into your mouth.
Fucking psycho, dude.
And then you eat rice. Let me tell you, folks.
We're going to get sued.
No. It's like,
the Dave Chang show that I should burn my tongue every time I go to Korean
market. It's like, getting, you want respect? It's like, you better fucking give us service. You better give us fucking, look at how hardcore I am. I don't put the rice in the jjigae.
No, never. Holy shit, never put the rice in the jjigae.
But
yeah.
People do.
My God.
I'm trying to tell you, like, if you want to show, like, hey, put some respect on my fucking name.
Yeah.
And you literally are, you intentionally leave your metal spoon in the jjigae for like 10 seconds. And then you take it out and you.
The Dave Chang Show is not responsible for any injury caused by the suggestion.
I mean, you're going to scare the shit out of me.
You're going to scare the shit out of me. I mean, what the fuck are you doing? Like,
that's what I do. So what? I can't speak Korean perfectly.
Get up and walk out. Just be like.
All right. So now you have that. Usually now you have a jjigae. Mm-hmm. You're eating that. And then if you have to order. If you are non-Korean people and you order naengmyeon.
Ooh.
Then I honestly think you're going to blow everyone's fucking mind. You don't get bibimbap. The move is this. You get, you know, maybe one bibimbap and two munbap. Or one and one.
Uh-huh.
And then when you say this is the, we're getting into the crux of it all. But to show how proficient you are at eating Korean food, you got to wait till the end. This is the last boss test. Let me look at the camera. The last boss test. The very last boss to prove to the servers and the kitchen in a Korean restaurant that is Korean barbecue that you mean fucking business is when you order munnaengmyeon and you're not a Korean person, you order munnaengmyeon and they bring it to you and you say, don't cut my noodles. That's the last
boss. Holy
shit. That's the last boss.
I have never beaten that boss.
You tell Ajumma, she's going to bring out the scissors. Yeah. You don't have to say everything. She's going to bring out the kawi and she's going to cut these noodles.
Uh-huh.
And if you just go like this, right in front of her, don't even have to say anything. You know? Yeah. She's going to know.
Anya, yeah.
She's going to know. Or he, mostly.
What are you doing to our listeners? This is like such a, that's such a high point. Why would you suggest that to them? That's such a hard, that's an apex that's difficult to reach.
That's shooting the moon, man. I'm just giving people the real deal here. I don't think it's ever been played out.
Yeah.
Before, but if you do that, I think you might get a free meal.
Yeah, you might get free booze. Like, holy shit. Dude.
I don't think that's ever been done.
I have never. Have you scaled this Everest?
I do that. I never get my noodles cut.
Really?
Because I'm a man, motherfucker.
Fuck out of here with that shit. No.
You don't never cut your naengmyeon, man.
Oh my God.
Never
cut your naengmyeon. That's some real ass North Korean shit right there.
Never cut your naengmyeon.
That's
never
see that?
Cut your naengmyeon.
That's
never
some Pyongyang shit right there.
Never, ever, ever.
That's crazy.
Ever. And I don't put mustard in that shit. I don't put more vinegar.
Okay, that's also crazy. What the?
No.
America. Listen, good listeners of the Dave Chang Show, don't listen to this.
Your fucking naengmyeon broth is bullshit.
Wow. Yeah. That is, wow.
Go eat that super sweet shit that you young kids like.
Wow. First of all, please cut your naengmyeon. I don't need you choking to death at a Korean barbecue.
Don't cut your naengmyeon. Don't.
I hate it. This is insane.
I'll hit it. I'll send that fucking bowl back. You cut my fucking name in.
I want to see you eat a whole bowl of name in without cutting it once. That's crazy. How are you doing that? How much are you chewing? First of all, that's so much chewing.
It's the only way to do it.
Oh my gosh. Bro, I feel like when I was a kid, I had an experience where I almost like choked to death on Ning Man. And that's why I will never do that.
That's why we do it.
That's insane.
We got to call the herd.
I'm a 6'6", 250-pound Korean. How could you call me? I'm like genetic like proof in the pudding here. No.
I'm telling you right now, folks. Most people don't want to eat a cold noodle soup that's chewy buckwheat noodle. They don't. You can watch, they have the Netflix special on Ning Man. It's very, very good. Very highly recommend it. It is a dish of my family. My dad from North Korea, my mom, that is what they love to eat. My dad would eat it year round. Even in a super cold. Cold noodle pickle broth soup. It's not really appealing to anyone else, but boy, is it fucking delicious. If you order that, and that to me is that's a real dessert, right? At a Korean barbecue. Right, if you don't get naengmyeon, it's okay. But like, you're missing out. And I don't know many non-Korean tables that are like, I'm sure it happens. Give me the naengmyeon. Give me the naengmyeon.
That's such an astute observation.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you always have someone that's like, no, I'm a bibim naengmyeon person. Great. Right. But you should never have more bibim naengmyeon to mun naengmyeon. The ratio should always be 2-1.
Okay, that's North Korean talk. That's the North Korean lobby talking. No, you got bibim. I think bibim has its charm.
Kim Jong-un just activated.
I know. It's just like some chip in your brain just activated. It's like, it should be 2-1 more. I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. I think the sari, you know, the little thing on the side, that's a good spot for the bibim naengmyeon. You're like, they'll be like, would you like any sari? Would you like any extra noodles on the side, which you can mix into the broth? I think that's a good spot for the bibim naengmyeon. Yeah. Get a big mole and then have a little.
And again, like I'm not into the sharing the naengmyeon. You can order the minis.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But you don't share. don't share. And you drink from the bowl.
Very important.
If you do all of these things right, you will go to heaven. And let me just tell you again. If you tell the server to not touch your noodles.
Don't do this, guys. Don't do this.
You know, I never eat naengmyeon.
That's the most hardcore Korean move. And like, as much as I make fun of your Korean, like that is the most hardcore Korean move I've ever heard. Like that's worse than the spoon. That's worse than dunking the spoon that you get and just leaving it there. That's crazy. This is crazier. Not cutting your naengmyeon is crazy.
Never.
Oh my God. Never. This is like,
you should never fucking cut your goddamn noodles.
Oh, to my
don't
people.
Don't cut your naengmyeon. Don't let them do it. Ever. Don't let them touch it. No.
Did your pops ever like have his noodles?
My dad would send that fucking bowl back.
It's so gangster. Oh my God.
I swear to God, you cut my fucking noodles, like he'd send that shit back.
That's so gangster, dude. Holy shit. If anyone's ever had him, they know what I'm talking about. Those noodles are so long. Super bouncy, super chewy.
What you know saying is you can easily choke on them.
You can easily choke on them. It's very scary. But like,
life is dangerous. Yeah,
you live dangerously.
So if you followed all of those steps, right?
You've already killed it.
This is the kimchi principle. You won. You fucked around and you got a triple double.
That's a perfect day at the Korean barbecue.
Right?
Perfect
if you did that, barbecue. You're going to earn the respect and love and admiration of everybody. If you did that at Parks, Jenny's going to put your fucking name on the wall.
Yeah, I should take a photo with you.
He's a random fucking person. They're going to put your fucking
name
on the
wall. Who's that white guy on the wall? I've never seen him before.
He ordered better than anybody, and he's done it better than anybody has ever done it here.
That's facts. That's a great day to Korean barbecue. 100%. Yeah.
I'm still shocked that you cut your noodles.
Bro, I'm trying not to die. You know, like, all right, maybe it's a North Korean thing. I don't know. Like, you just got that robustness to just down a huge ass long bed of noodles. But like, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. And when I was a kid, I would like, my mom told me I cried at the dinner table because I thought I was choking to death. Like,
I've always been taught no cutting noodles.
So gangster, dude.
The funniest thing is I'm the least Korean person anyone's ever met. Most people.
Yeah.
But I'm in food. I'm like, the most crazy.
You are the most gangsta. Like, what the hell? Yeah, that is some OG shit. Like, yeah, first ballot Hall of Fame. If you can do Nick Man without cutting it, I mean, they just cut it by default. You know what I'm talking about? They come over and they're just like,
and that's why you gotta interject.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's
call
I'm stunned.
Me Yopo, motherfucker. On that note, give us five stars.